This is Pet Life Radio. Let's talk pets.
Is your pet stressed out? Does your pet need annual vaccines? Which pet is best for a child? Would you know if your dog was in pain? Pet Life Radio presents The Pet Doctor, where you'll learn everything about keeping your pet healthy and happy. From pet care, pet meds and grooming, to pet food, pet insurance and dental care, this is the place to find out everything there is to know about pet wellness. Whether you have a dog, cat, reptile or rabbit, you'll find answers for your pets straight from the vets, because it's your pet. Health matters. Please welcome your Pet Doctor host, veterinary media consultant and veterinarian, Dr. Bernadine Cruz.
Diversity in veterinary medicine has traditionally been viewed as the inclusion of more women in the profession. The first woman graduated from MacKillop Veterinary College in Chicago in 1903. Very slowly, more women entered this field of medicine. 1970, 89% of veterinary college enrollment was held by men. 2007, only 37 years later, was dubbed the Year of the Female Veterinarian, with 75% of the year's graduates being women. 2009 was the tipping point for the profession, with 55% of the licensed DVM being female. As of 2017, 80% of all veterinary students were women, and currently 64% of practicing veterinarians you'll encounter will be women, and 90% of veterinary nurses are women. But diversity is more than gender. Sexual orientation, ethnicity, race, religion, and age all must be considered. Veterinary medicine has been called the whitest profession in America. 86% of American veterinarians are white, 6% Asian, and 8% Latinx. Stats on LGBTQ are scant, but as of 2011, 7% of veterinary students identified as such. Improving inclusivity is a major focus of veterinary medicine recruitment and advancement. But the question remains as to how we got to our current status and what is being done to have the profession more closely mirror the general population. And why is it important? My guest is Dr. Tierra Price. She is part of a very elite cadre of veterinarians. Dr. Price is also one of the 2.1% of veterinarians in the United States who are African American. We're going to discuss the challenges in becoming a veterinarian when no one looks like you, and how she and the profession are attempting to remedy this disparity, and the organization she founded, the Black DVM Network. We'll be right back after this short break.
Looking for a dental treat that does more for your dog? Daily Dose is a 2-in-1 chew that pairs a daily dental scrub with powerful supplements to help with the biggest health concerns facing our dogs. Daily Dose was developed by vets to be simple to use and super effective. Plus, dogs love the taste. Available for joint, skin, heart health, or calming. Daily Dose, your pet's daily dose of awesome. Visit yourpetsdailydose.com to save $3 on your first bag with promo code PETLIFE. That's yourpetsdailydose.com.
Let's Talk Pets on PetLifeRadio.com.
Dr. Price, thank you. This is a topic that I've never covered in the past in my shows, and I think is so important to do so. So I appreciate you being on today.
Yes, of course. Thanks for having me.
Well, as I said, in 1903, the first woman was accepted to veterinary school. But the first Black woman didn't graduate till 1949. What was it like in your class?
Yeah, so I was one of five Black veterinary students in my class. And I'm not sure what the stats were on other races and ethnicities specifically, but the number of Black students continued to increase in the classes below me. But at one point, there were only about 10 Black veterinary students amongst all four classes.
And where did you go to school again?
Virginia Maryland College of Veterinary Medicine. So, okay. Yeah, I was at Virginia Tech. And so there were five Black students in my class.
And how long ago did you graduate?
I graduated in May of 2020. So I am a new grad.
So here we have really current stats of what, you know, the population diversity looks like. How did you get involved and how did you get interested in veterinary medicine? Did you have a lot of Black veterinarians to look up to?
So I knew that I wanted to be a veterinarian since I was young, very, very young. I have pictures of me at the age of 6 going to career day as a veterinarian. So I really can't pinpoint when I decided that that was going to be my career or when I decided that I was interested in it. I knew that I loved cats and dogs at the time. So naturally, I felt like that was the career path. But I didn't see a Black veterinarian until I was a sophomore in college. So not until 2014 at Michigan State was my first time encountering a Black veterinarian. I didn't have any Black veterinarians to shadow, or I hadn't seen any outside of Dr. Doolittle, the Eddie Murphy remake of it.
True.
I did not grow up with Black veterinarians, and I honestly did not even know if there were any Black veterinarians, because that's how isolated I was in Kentucky.
Do you think it's important? I'm Hispanic, and growing up, I didn't see any Hispanic veterinarians either. And I don't know if I was just blind to what was going on growing up in Southern California, but like you, decided at an early age, yes, I wanted to go into medicine.
Yeah. So I think that, you know, for me, I didn't take much notice to the fact that there weren't many Black veterinarians at first. I just thought that it was something I was pursuing that, you know, not a lot of people that looked like me were pursuing. You know, I didn't have anyone in my family that was interested in veterinary medicine or really even interested in animals. So I just figured that being a vet was something like off the wall, and not many people pursued it anyway. But as I started to dive deeper into the profession, I realized that our profession was very homogenous. It looked the same just about everywhere I went. And that was striking to me, because I did meet students that were Black or people of color that were interested in vet med, but I didn't see them in the profession.
Why do you think, Dr. Price, that it is so white? Because all cultures, all ethnicities, all religions, we all have pets. You know, a lot of people are involved still in agriculture, where you're going to need a large animal veterinarian. I know here in Los Angeles, there's a group of African-American riders. So they have horses, and it's in the middle of Los Angeles. They have a stable and they're riding through the streets. And that's kind of, you know, an oxymoron almost. You're going, what? Black ones? But even if you go back into time during the Wild West, there were a lot of Black and Hispanic, the gauchos, of course, you know, from Mexico. But why do you think that this field is so white?
Yeah, so I think that veterinary medicine has really set itself up to select for a population of people that are homogenous and that assimilate into a culture that promotes that type of familiarity. So we're really selecting for people with the same traits over and over and over again. And I think that opening up and widening our perspective of who veterinarians are, what they do, how they should live, their expectations will allow us to bring more people into our field and diversify the field. We have a very, in my opinion, a very stagnant culture.
But Terry, you're talking about this homogenous group of people that they're looking at, and they want to have a certain mindset, but you're looking at the mindset of, okay, you need to enjoy science. You need to be able to, at least for me, tolerate math and, you know, get through that. You need to have a certain philosophy of life of taking care of animals, knowing that it's also taking care of humans and taking care of the environment. Isn't that universal?
So those are the traits that veterinarians need the most. And those are the characteristics that we definitely need to keep in our selection of veterinarians. But other traits such as a toxic work culture, no work-life balance, working long, hard hours, having 600 plus animal hours of experience, having a diverse set of experiences with animals, all of those types of requirements are barriers for most people to complete. So definitely the science, the math, the value of human life and animal life and how they coexist is so important. Those are the mainstays of our profession. But I wrote a recommendation for a student a couple of months ago. And one of the guidelines for writing the recommendation was speak to how this student is committed to working long hours. And I'm thinking, man, that's crazy, because Veterinary Suicide Prevention Month speaks to how we shouldn't work long hours, but yet we're still selecting for students who have no concept of work-life balance. So it's things like that and the culture that we're brought into that really do select for people with the same mindset, the same background, and the same set of experiences. Again, 600 plus hours of animal experience has been debunked. It doesn't matter the number of hours that you complete before veterinary school, don't have a strong correlation with how you perform in veterinary school. So that's one of the requirements that can be lessened, because 600 hours is a lot. And if you grow up in an area that has no or limited access to veterinary care, or you grow up needing to work and not having the privilege of being able to volunteer to advance in your career, then 600 animal experience hours might be impossible to get for many, many years.
But don't you think that having diversity, I totally agree with you. It is hard to get those hours. And unless you're able to get a job in a veterinary hospital, it's difficult. But don't you believe having diversity is good? Because, you know, there are right now so many, and I've been on the admission board for UC Davis and Western University here in Southern California, and you see these applications as, I like dogs and cats. And it's like, well, that's nice. There is just so much more to veterinary medicine, because it truly is part of this one world, one health, one medicine. And having exposure, or at least being aware of what else is out there. Being a kid myself growing up in Los Angeles, I always, you know, people will say, well, what's the best college to go to? It has to be an agricultural school. It has to be Davis. You know, if you're here in California, it's like, no, I went to Cal State LA that was surrounded by parking lots and freeways. And the only animals I ever saw on campus and had access to were the feral dogs and cats. So for myself, I had to, and I was fortunate enough to be able, and I put myself through school to find an equine practitioner to shadow, to work at a place that was called Lion Country Safari. So got some exotic background. I did research when I was in college. So what's your views then about having a diversity of exposure?
Yeah, so having a diverse set of experiences is very important. But recognizing, I think that more importantly, recognizing the breadth of veterinary medicine is what we should be looking for in applicants. Because I had no access to cows, farm, large animals until I went to college. And if I had decided to do a community college, then I probably would have never had access at all. But that doesn't mean that I don't know what large animal vets do, or I can't research large animal vets, or, you know, I can't maybe visit one farm at one given time. But requiring that you have this many hours of large animal experience and this many hours of small animal experience, for some people, that is a barrier. And anyone that comes in saying, I want to practice cats and dogs only, they can still have done their research on the other arenas of vet med. So if they choose to speak on that in their essay, that's their prerogative. But they should, and you know, I tell people this all the time, you should let people know in your application that you have explored the entirety of veterinary medicine. And whether that be through webinars, TV shows, reading research papers, getting these experiences online, that's totally fine. But not everyone, I think it's important to realize, not everyone is going to have the access to all types of animals, hands-on experience before they get to vet school. And it's actually shouldn't, it, you know, doesn't really make much of a difference, because once you get in veterinary school, you should be able to get your hands on a horse, a cow, a pig, a sheep, a goat.
And you never know. You can always change your mind. I know a lot of my classmates did too. You know, they thought they wanted to go into equine medicine, and then they said, nope, I like research and that's what I want to do. And I love that you're talking about students. What do you think can be done to attract a greater diversity of a student applicant pool? How can you get out there letting them know that, oh yeah, there is veterinary medicine. You know, you maybe didn't consider going into vet med. You thought you wanted to become an MD.
Yeah. So I think that there are a ton of ways. People talk to high schoolers, people talk to preschoolers. I did a video for a career day for, I think it was supposed to be for a second or a third grade class. That video ended up going to the entire school district. So definitely getting in there early and exposing people to veterinary medicine, but more importantly, realizing that once you expose them to veterinary medicine, we have to welcome them into the profession. I know so many students that tried over and over and over again to get into vet school and, you know, really struggled. And so we, you know, I love the pipeline. I love talking about exposing people to veterinary medicine, but also making sure that we're knocking down the barriers to get into vet school and then supporting them throughout the profession. We can focus on the pipeline all day long, but we have to welcome them into this profession and we have to make them feel included and safe in the profession.
Definitely want to touch on that. I think probably right now is going to be a good time. Let's just go to a quick little break. We can come back. And then I want to talk about one of the other real detriments of trying to get into veterinary medicine when you look at the cost and knowing that you just recently graduated, kind of see from your point of view, what were your loans like? What was it like for your classmates too? So again, this is Dr. Bernadine Cruz. We're listening to Dr. Tiara Price talking about how can we improve the diversity in veterinary medicine from being the whitest profession in the United States. We'll be right back after this short break.
Please have a seat in the waiting room. The doctor will be with you shortly, right after these messages.
For those fortunate to have experienced the deep bond and unconditional love of a companion animal, the death that follows can be one of the most difficult and misunderstood losses to go through. Many times, this devastating loss goes unrecognized and trivialized by family and friends, leaving grieving pet parents struggling to find healthy ways to cope with the loss. In And I Love You Still, a thoughtful guide and remembrance journal for healing the loss of a pet, Dr. Julianne Corbin calls attention to the difficulties unique to the loss of a beloved pet and provides an interactive and compassionate guide to help you process your loss and work towards coming to a place of peace and healing. For those interested in journal therapy and looking for a professionally written and compassionate resource to help understand and reconcile the grief associated with the loss of your pet, this book is for you. And I Love You Still, a thoughtful guide and remembrance journal by Julianne Corbin, is now available for purchase on Amazon and other major book retailers.
Porkchop. His coat is very thick. He's an Akita, German Shepherd, Lab, Husky mix. Harold, the Border Collie Pit mix, has the most beautiful jet black coat. Stuart, my rat terrier, has fur now where he never had it before.
DINOVITE.com.
Dynavite will give them a beautiful, lustrous coat. It will make you smile.
You get some Dynavite.
How happy your dog will be.
DINOVITE.com.
Let's talk pets.
Let's talk pets.
On Pet Life Radio.
Pet Life Radio.
PetLifeRadio.com.
Welcome back to the Pet Doctor on Pet Life Radio. The doctor is in, and we'll see you now.
Dr. Price, I give you so much credit because knowing that you just recently graduated from veterinary school, I may be wrong, but I have a feeling you probably have some student loans.
I do.
How bad? Because I know that the average cost for 4 years ranges from basically $150,000 to up to $400,000. And trying to pay that off, and veterinarians don't make that much money. We definitely don't make as much as MDs, our counterparts. How is your loan status doing? You don't have to tell us the amount, but how are you feeling?
Yeah, so I am definitely in student loan debt. I have about $200,000 of student loan debt. My undergrad degree at the University of Connecticut was just about paid for, out of state student there. So I was really grateful that I got that opportunity and did not have to take on that debt. But I also went to veterinary school out of state because I went to Virginia Tech. I'm originally from Louisville, Kentucky. And so that out-of-state debt I did carry with me.
So that is really tough. And I know one of the other tough things besides just money is oftentimes we're having these ethnic groups where their parents or their siblings never went to college and they're first generation college students. How do you think that impacts? Do you think that it's more of an issue for minorities?
I would say that it's probably not more of an issue for minorities. It's definitely a contributing factor to maybe how many people we see coming into the profession due to the amount of debt that people will come into, or maybe not having the background credit to sign off on loans. I'm not sure if people are aware, but most of the loans that I took out in veterinary school were federal loans, but I needed a co-signer. So I had to have someone, which ended up being my parents, that had a good credit that could co-sign on my loans. If you don't have that, then those loans aren't available to you and you might have to pursue other routes, which almost always still require a co-signer because in school you're not bringing in a lot of income to show that you can take on that type of loan debt. So I definitely think that it's an issue. And, you know, anyone that is a first generation student might face that issue, but it's definitely something that we have to think about. Talking about loan debt, you know, I think that goes hand in hand with talking about how important it is for people to be able to have a job and work and save up money before veterinary school. And a lot of times people are punished if that job is not an animal related career. And they're punished again by admission standards saying that you need this much experience and this many hours. But when you're working 40 hours a week, sometimes that is really tough. And so again, it becomes a barrier, and talking about loan debt is really important and financial literacy is really important.
And I think it's great that so many students now, and I know many states are trying to really focus on getting some financial literacy to students even before they finish high school so they can learn early, because that's such a critical time. I know I just was reading about a group in Augusta, Georgia called Vets of All Colors, trying to get exposure to high school kids, you know, getting them money so they can get some experience and, you know, trying to earn some money at the same time. If you're a younger group, Vet Set Go, we had the opportunity, Dr. Carpenter, to chat with him on our show one time. And this is for the tween age of how do you get the experience, how do you get the exposure? Because, boy, you're young and you want to get exposure, but there's nobody willing to hire you. And then the career days and shadowing in the old days before coronavirus, when you could actually go to some veterinary hospitals and get some shadowing. But talking about colleges, as I believe there are like 107 HBCU colleges in the United States right now. And Tuskegee was founded, Tuskegee School of Veterinary Medicine, in 1945. Do you think university colleges like this are a hindrance or a major assist to minorities in general?
I can't think of how they would be a hindrance.
Okay, do you think that they're a major assistance? You know, sometimes people might say that, you know, you're being coddled because you're able to get into a university because you were a minority. And if you had to go into the general population, you might not have what it takes, knowing that it's just as difficult to get into an HBCU.
Oh, I see. No, I honestly cannot think of one way that an HBCU would be a hindrance. I think that they provide an amazing community and support network. And again, you get exposed to people that look like you, that you can relate to, that are experiencing the same struggles or have experienced the same struggles. And they kind of give you this hope because you see them doing amazing things, doing the things that you one day aspire to do. So I think that HBCUs are very important. I also think that, you know, from their founding, they were founded for a reason, and that was because no other colleges and universities were taking in Black students. And so that's that's really, you know, their roots. And I think that to this day, Tuskegee graduates the most Black veterinarians. What would veterinary medicine be without Tuskegee?
Even whiter, yes.
Yeah, the 2.1 would probably be closer to 0.1. So I think that they play a really huge, important, beneficial role in doing that. And along with the communities that they provide, you know, I founded Black DVM Network in 2018 as somewhat of a support system in a community, similar to how on the same premise that HBCUs are founded. But Black DVM Network is for veterinary professionals. So it's once you get out of the university, once you leave as a student, where do you go? Where's your support? Who can you count on? And that's what Black DVM Network is for: veterinarians, technicians, and students in professional school.
Definitely want to chat more about that. You had mentioned earlier on in our conversation about the fact that we need a more welcoming profession. So veterinary medicine, all right, you're through the door, you got into veterinary school, you now, is it welcoming there in veterinary school? Did you feel a pushback? Like, hey, I know when women were first involved in veterinary medicine, getting into schools, and even if you remember seeing a movie, A Matter of Sex, for Ruth Bader Ginsburg, it's like, you, woman, are taking jobs away from a man. So do you feel that way? Do you think that's what's not welcoming for minorities? Or what was your feeling of not being welcomed? Or are they now being welcomed?
Yeah, so I think that, Virginia Maryland College of Veterinary Medicine had an outstanding group of people that were committed to diversity, equity, and inclusion. And I was very happy to be there. I don't think that I would have felt comfortable enough forming Black DVM Network if it hadn't been for the support system I had at Virginia Tech. Because a lot of people, if we're being honest, a lot of people, when I formed Black DVM Network in 2018, said that it was too radical and it was divisive. But I think now, and in these last few months of 2020, from June on, people realized how important something like Black DVM Network is. But so I felt welcomed into my veterinary school class, but sometimes the people that were there, so fellow students and some professors, were not exposed enough to people that were different from them. So every day I received questions about my hair. Every day I received, you know, questions about just Black people in general. Oh, do Black people have dogs? Do Black people own pets? Do Black people have farms? You know, so I ended up being the somehow like Black people expert, which I think a lot of people, out of curiosity, you know, they think that they're being very nice. They're saying, I'm curious about you. I'm curious about your culture. But in reality, it's exhausting, and it's exhausting for the person taking all of that in. And so again, there were just a lot of things that I couldn't do or express myself as wholly as I would like to because of how things were set up. So I think, you know, usually I use my hair as a good example because a lot of times the guidelines and qualifications or professional guidelines for hair don't really mesh well with the hair that I have because it's not based off of people with hair like mine. So braids, dreadlocks, a lot of the times were like banned in surgery suites. People said that they weren't sterile or they can't be cleaned, you know, just kind of like ridiculous ideas. And that's not a specific Virginia Tech policy, but that is a policy in some other arenas and some like lab facilities that is almost outrageous. So there's just little things like that where people could be a little bit more inclusive if they knew more about how to be accepting of people that are different from them. And that's probably more of what our profession needs.
So it's almost of a benign ignorance that they just don't know. I can imagine it did feel good to have the knowledge these people are curious and they want to know a little bit more. And I know so many times women in particular, you get into a situation and you know you're qualified, but you almost kind of wonder, I feel kind of like an imposter. Did you ever have that feeling, like that imposter syndrome?
Yes. So imposter syndrome was very real for me, probably more towards the end of veterinary school than anything. Once I got into clinics, and it happens now that I'm a new grad, imposter syndrome is very, very big. And I think that's something that probably most people experience, but on top of the struggles and experiences that I might have as a Black woman, imposter syndrome can almost be crippling. I had a professor once tell me, we were riding in a truck together and we had a conversation about a few things. And he said, wow, you know, I didn't think that you and I could have a conversation as intelligent as that. And I said, oh.
That was a nice slap in the face.
Yeah. I said, oh, why not? And he said, I just didn't think that you and I had anything in common. And that's one of those things that, you know, you thought that we didn't have anything in common because of how different we look, or, you know, that brings up so many questions. There are so many assumptions and biases wrapped up in that. And I think that those are the types of things that it's important to address. Even though I do practice small animal medicine now, I did have a really large interest in large animal, and I wanted to be an ambulatory large vet. And so for a lot of people, that was astonishing because they can't think of a Black large animal vet, even though there are some out there. So yeah, so it's just conversations and comments like that, that really weigh you down. And you wonder, do I have to outperform my classmates just for people to think that I am up to par?
It was just like women when first got into veterinary medicine. And I think for minorities in general, you're exactly right, that you have to be 10 times better than your white counterparts or your male counterparts to prove yourself. And eventually those numbers and the prejudice are going to hopefully move aside. It's still not there even for women in general. I love the fact you started your organization. So Black DVM Network. Why did you start it? What is it doing?
Yeah, so I started Black DVM Network because I felt isolated. I was in southwestern Virginia, very rural part, not a lot of diversity. And then I was in veterinary school. I was, you know, I just did not feel like I had a group of people that I could really be myself around. Anytime that I wanted to, you know, let loose and be myself, I would get questions about the music that I listen to, the shows that I watch. Why does my hair look like this? Why do I drink this? Why do I eat this? And so it was really exhausting. I didn't have a group of people that I could really just be completely authentic around. And so I was looking for other Black veterinary students, wondering, are they having these same struggles? Where are they? Who are they? So I started the Instagram page, Black DVM Network, and I began highlighting Black veterinarians and veterinary students. And from there, I realized there was a huge gap in resources for the veterinary community. I was receiving messages from technicians, from clients, from students asking for, you know, Black veterinarians that they could work for. If I had any advice on getting into vet school, I had pre-vet students knocking the door down. And so I said, well, you know what? If this is something that we need, I'm willing to go the link for our community. And so I started the Black DVM Network directory, which is the first ever cultural affinity directory in veterinary medicine. And it has Black veterinarians and Black technicians on it. It's a free resource mainly for clients if they're looking for Black veterinarians. And some people don't understand, why would someone be looking for a Black veterinarian specifically? Well, the answer is simple. They've been discriminated against in a practice by someone before and did not feel like they received adequate veterinary care because of how they were discriminated against.
And yes, you're totally right. I think having that diversity in my own practice, we have a Brazilian doctor, we have a Mexican doctor, we have a veterinarian from Iran. I kind of speak a little bit of Spanish. So it is marvelous when we have somebody walk through the door and they need somebody who speaks Farsi. We have it, or Portuguese, we have it, or Spanish. It's marvelous. So yes, I think sometimes when your own ear hears your own language or you see your own face reflected back at you, it's like, yes, I feel more comfortable. I can be at ease.
Right. That's so amazing. And so the other things that Black DVM Network is doing, the directory was our first initiative. It went over very well. And so we moved on from there. We are now in a platform, an online platform for the empowerment of Black veterinary professionals. We have a membership model, so people can become a member at our website, which is www.blackdvmnetwork.com. And we offer a members only space for candid discussion. We have community sessions, so we check in with each other every so often. We also offer live streamed webinars and events. Most of our events are open to members and non-members. So for example, we're doing a stress resiliency event this week, and that's open for members and non-members. But on top of that, we also have a job board posting. We have an externship listing. We have exclusive discounts and partnerships. And so our community really is a plethora of resources for Black veterinary professionals to learn and to grow personally and professionally. Most of our programming is around our focus areas, which are financial literacy, professional development, entrepreneurship, wellness, and medicine. And so again, we just try to do our best to provide those resources to the Black veterinary community that they may have been shut out of or not have access to because of the lack of network.
And if you weren't Black, can you still join?
So our membership is exclusive to Black veterinary professionals. That's our full membership, but we are rolling out an affiliate membership for non-Black members or non-veterinary professionals. So that will be on the website soon. But if anyone's interested in that, you can always shoot us a message in our contact box so that you can be the first to know about it.
Thank you for being inclusive. On our website, we're going to be listing quite a few different links for anyone who's interested in becoming a veterinarian. So the American Association of Veterinary Medical Colleges, sites for if you're a young person looking into it, if you're Latinx, you want to learn more, if you're queer, if you are Black, if you are a woman, there's many different links, Asian, Native Americans, lots of different resources out there for you. So Dr. Price, thank you very much for being on the podcast with me today. I think it opened up a lot of people's eyes, my own included, so I appreciate that.
Awesome. Thank you so much for having me. Anytime.
This is Dr. Bernadine Cruz. You've been listening to The Pet Doctor on Pet Life Radio. Please tune in again next week. We'll give you more information on how to make you the best possible pet owner. Thanks for listening.
Pets can be a wonderful addition to your life because they're a member of the family. Keeping them healthy and happy is important. Pet Life Radio presents The Pet Doctor with veterinary media consultant and veterinarian Dr. Bernadine Cruz. Whether you have a dog, cat, reptile, or rabbit, you'll find answers for your pets straight from the vets. The Pet Doctor, on demand every week, only on PetLifeRadio.com.